Well, good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another episode of the Speak the Truth podcast. Your host, Matt Tardio. Today, we're going to be going over what the heck is taking place along the front lines in Ukraine because Russian troops are getting pushed back quite a bit. As a matter of fact, their whole little incursion that they made when they broke through the line a couple weeks ago, well, it's not going so hot for them, and it looks like they've actually decided to try to flex their troops other places. How's that working out for them? Not so good. Yesterday, Ukraine ended up taking more ground around Pokrovsk and has been confirmed that they're pushing the Russians back over there. Meanwhile, Russia's trying to flex and kind of work their way around them. And Ukraine continues to take more Russian POWs. It would be Russian prisoners of war getting taken. After we go over that, we're going to be moving in. We're going to be talking about the Middle East. What the hell is the U.S. ambassador to Turkey doing over inside of Lebanon? And what just happened that's going to affect what the IDF ends up doing in the future? For those of you guys that don't know, the IDF still has about 5 outposts over inside of southern Lebanon, just south of the blue line. And what they're looking to do is they're looking at taking care of Hezbollah and protecting their borders from them. Got a lot of that coming up here as well. Not to mention, Israel also planned today and brought up how to take care of the Druze over inside Syria. Yeah, imagine that. And guess what? I've got a great explanation for what ended up happening in yesterday's strike. You know, it's amazing what happens when you get other videos and other angles that give you a little bit more insight to probably what was going on the ground over inside of Gaza in that hospital strike yesterday inside of Nasser. So we're going to be analyzing that video today as well. Woo! Yeah! Jason Carmichael, man, you've been a member for 15 months. Holy freaking crap. Good morning, sir. And Bo Williams just decides to come in and trump you. He's been a member of 20 months. Saying good morning to everybody. Ladies and gentlemen, as this video plays, go ahead, let me know where you're checking in from around the world. I want to introduce you guys to Donetsk and show you what life is like over there. I told you not that long ago that there was a serious water issue over inside of Donetsk. The Russians had to truck it in all of the time. Nate Vance and I actually like laughed about it and talked about it, showing like the amount of freaking water that these guys were trucking in. I mean, it's insane the amount that they bring in. I think even Texas stated that at least once a week they end up doing that. Well, in this video that you're about to watch, you're going to see some bambushka over inside of Donetsk, which would be like an old Russian grandma, babushka, right? Gathering water. Check out how she decides that she needs to gather water.
Вот так центральний городской район Макіївки. Люди набирають воду. Вода йде везде, но не там, где надо. Вот так люди набирають воду. Просто обалдеть. Вода йде со... Вот так центральний городской...
I had to watch this video a couple times just to make sure what I was seeing was actually accurate, that you have a couple teenage girls walk by this babushka. And then this dude ends up just driving right around her as she sits there. And I don't even know, like, I mean, that's not even a proper wheelchair, for crying out loud. That's like a shower chair with freaking wheels on it for this old lady that she's got. But looks like it might even be like a hand cart that's been redesigned for her to be able to go out there and do this. And then you take a look at it. Pick, welcome to becoming a true supporter, good friend. And you take a look at it, and as you come around, it actually looks like the water might be bubbling up from the ground, almost like it's a natural spring that ended up breaking through. But I believe that's actually just water that she's dripping back in there. CR says, finally get to catch one live again. Started a new job. I've been super busy. Good to be back. God bless you, Matt, and the Banana Gang. God bless you all. God bless you, sir. Yeah, so let's watch this here. Flowing everywhere, but from where it should be. So initially, I thought that this was water springing up, but it could just be her dropping it. But these drops are like off over to the side. So I actually think that might be a little spring that's coming up out of the ground. And that's where she's collecting the water from, right where this guy is driving through. That's a serious freaking problem, right? When we talk about infrastructure, logistics, and things of that nature for the people that are living over inside of the Donbas region, their life kind of sucks. Over inside of Kherson, if we were to take and we were to, because I'm going to open up the map anyways here in a little bit. I hope you guys are ready because this is going to be a little bit of map heavy when we get on it. But we were talking about over Donetsk over here, right? Like over inside of this black area is where we were talking about. Now we're going to go down over into Kherson. Why? Because over here, over the last 2 days, Russians have been attacking civilians on the highway. I'll say that again. Russians have been attacking civilians on the highway. Mike Silva becoming a true supporter. Mike, I feel like you've been a true supporter and YouTube just doesn't like you and just constantly makes you update. Water pipe broke lately? No, it's not a water pipe breaking, man. They have a legit water issue over inside of Donetsk. Like they are trucking water in all of the time. That's worse than the poop fountains, man. Like, I can't even tell you, like, that is equivalent to the poop fountains. It's not even. I mean, poop fountains would be welcome at that point, because at least in that case, it would have some sort of running water. But I want you to take a look at, like, I mean, if you want to subscribe to that, man, take a look. I mean, this lady, as we get close and we look at her, hold on, let me get this up. Before we go over to Hirsan, I mean, look at this. This lady has her little stool, like little freaking shower stool thing. She's got her little freaking cart for trucking stuff around. I mean, this is an operation that this woman has set up. This isn't like she just had issues with water one day and she decided she was going to go pull water out of this freaking puddle. That's not what this is. This is this lady making a conscious decision to go out here and do this likely every single day to get her freaking drinking water that she's going to take back to her house, purify, boil, do whatever she's got to do, filter it, then come back, toilet septic back up. Yeah. And again, this is, dude, numerous reports, numerous, and Russia even admits to this, and Russia is the ones that's like releasing these videos of them trucking water in. What ended up happening was you had all of these wells over there that end up servicing this entire region. And all of those wells went to crap. They weren't properly maintained. And so they ended up getting filled with rust and all sorts of other contaminants that make that water undrinkable. And so their water supply is trash over there. And this isn't like Matt making up like Ukrainian propaganda or anything. I mean, that's just legit. All right. So yeah, we're going to go from Donetsk and we're going to come over here. All right. From Donetsk, and we're going to go down into Kherson, and we're going to talk about what's taking place down there, because it's not acceptable. What they've been doing down here, let me center this on the map and zoom in. What they've been doing down here is they've been targeting, all right, Ukrainians that are traveling along this route, right, coming out of Kherson, okay? And they have been using drones in order to do so. This entire highway, and I've seen numerous pictures of this, and I'm just going to get this video up. This entire highway system has just been littered with civilian vehicles. Mike Anderson says, Matt, do you see the zero line ever moving drastically given how hard both sides have dug in, especially Ukrainian defending like champs? No, I really don't see that zero line moving that much more than it is. Where we have seen, well, hold on. Let me play this, and then we're going to get, because we have a whole discussion on the zero line, Mike. And I want to make sure that I'm giving you guys an accurate assessment. I'm not jumping around too much. My ADHD brain's going to kick in. So let's show this highway, and let's, as you guys are seeing this, watch. You're going to see these destroyed vehicles that have been pushed off to the side. Now, Ukraine supposedly has been trying to install nets and stuff over the highway, but the Russian fiber optic drones continue to smash these civilian vehicles.
Власне, наслідки вчорашньої атаки дронів на цивільне авто. Машини, на жаль, які потрапили.
You guys see that right there? Those are all destroyed civilian vehicles. And this is all following. I think Preston Stewart did a video on this like a month ago at least. Where he was talking about how Russians were just targeting civilians with drones, going over there and doing that. And now we've got Russian FPV drones going after civilian vehicles that were traveling along this route. And again, this reporting now for a solid 24 plus hours has been coming out of here. Did you guys see that? It's literally on both sides of the road. Multiple vehicles. There we've got one. Back it up. Two. Three. That one's wrecked. Bad. Four. Five. I mean, multiple vehicles along this tiny little route that have been targeted by the Russians. And again, they're civilian vehicles. They're not military transport vehicles. You guys can see that as it goes along. I love Linda Lou down there. Linda, you were getting out of control in the comments section last night, girl. I got to keep you freaking reined in. You're doing too much for yourself over there. Also, just kind of interesting, I've been hearing that the Ukrainians were making a push. And I believe this is coming out of the same exact location, which I'm about to talk to you guys about up over on the map. So let me just go ahead and get this up, because I'm about to show you guys some Bradley fighting vehicles that are finally back in action down here. Okay. When we take a look at Pokrovsk and where everything's at, Ukraine has made some advancements. And you guys can see right down over here, these two little villages. Here's Dobrobryla, and then you've got, I forget the name of this one, but I've got it written down, and we'll talk about it here in a little bit. I might pull up Deep State, because it varies just slightly from this map itself. But most notably, there's two directions that Ukraine is pushing in on. And if you look at the main supply route, which if I go and I cut this, this is obviously where Russia had busted through the line a little bit ago. And I told you that Ukraine had already like choked this route off, right? And that Russians can't push through. Reading over lots of different reports and lots of different assessments over what's taking on specifically in this area. And just to give you a general overview before I start giving you almost like a step-by-step play of what's taking place here, is I was accurate in my assessment that Russians likely over in Pokrovsk had decided once this had broken through that they were going to be flexing troops from this area to try to come up and push through here, all right, in order to capitalize on this brief little breach that they ended up having. But again, we talked about it. It was only like 100 meters freaking wide worth of wood line. Everything else that was designated as that breach down over here along this line was like wide open terrain, which is going to be highly susceptible to freaking drones, to artillery, to freaking like, you know, attack, like whatever, man. Any other missiles like or munitions, indirect fire munitions that Ukraine has access to would have been it, right? And so what Ukraine's been doing, and this one's brand new, it just popped up the other day. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, as they're pushing down and through, and it almost looks like they're fighting towards each other. Now, what stands in between them is this creek bed, and that creek bed within itself is a huge problem for the Russians as they go to push through there. And so you've got them choked off now here and here, meaning that the only place they can get through is through this really crap terrain, which happens to be that little bit of wooded area that we talked about. All right. Generally speaking, where you see water, you see woodline. And Cog Faraday coming in, gifting out 5 Speak the Truth memberships. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Now, with that being said, giving you an idea over what's going on in that area. And again, that is a general overview that we're about to break down. I want you to take a look at this freaking Bradley fighting vehicle as it just crushes Russian positions. And you know me and music, I got to turn that crap off because I can't stand it. But as we take a look, what we're actually seeing is these like BFVs moving very, very freely over in this area and just attacking these Russian positions. You can actually see their munitions just going off and smoking those wood lines as they're driving through. So what does that tell me? Well, that tells me that the Ukrainians aren't necessarily worried about the Russians in the wood line, that their assets and everything that they have inside of there aren't exactly made for armor. And you likely just have a bunch of foot soldiers that are on the ground, just a bunch of little infantry guys that don't have any anti-armor capabilities with them. And any anti-armor capabilities they did have are likely gone, meaning that these guys are cut off and they can't do a shitting thing for the Ukrainians when they actually come for them. They're just choked off. I mean, look at these brads, man. They're just literally storming through the area and doing whatever they want. And that's pretty wild. Now, Bradleys are armored vehicles, but they're not exactly made to fight tanks or anything like that. RPG-7s can have like a decent impact on these freaking vehicles and cause a hell of a lot of damage. So keeping that in mind, when you take a look at this, how effective do you think the Russian troops are that are hiding in these wood lines? Likely all they're doing is being harassed by these brads, just going over there and just smashing on them, just to keep them kind of bedded down, figure out where they're at. If they can identify some more of these Russian positions, if they're able to figure this, some of this stuff out, then they can take and they can target them with like different, you know, munitions, indirect fire assets, FPV drones, whatever it is that they feel like launching at them. CH coming in, gifting out a Speak the Truth membership. Appreciate you, sir. All right. So there's that. And while Ukraine's busy doing that, the Ust-Luga liquefied gas terminal has also decided to catch fire within the last 24 hours. Check this out.
Что, подавай? Проводи в УБК врача, Димон. А? Покажи в УБК, как пройти.
Now, why is it that this happened? What caused this sucker to spark off? Well, what actually ended up causing this thing to spark off happened to be a freaking Ukrainian drone. So Ukrainian drones are able to go in and strike pretty dang deep over inside of Russia. And, you know, Trump had just came out a little bit ago and he'd stated that you can't expect, you know, Ukraine to win this war unless they are using, you know, like the provided munitions to actually strike inside of Russia. So, yeah, we've got to like free that up. And we've also got some updates for you on the different amounts of stuff that have actually been supplied. And they're pretty big. All right. So listen to this as we go through this. Germany is going to allocate 9 billion euros. That's roughly 10 billion U.S. dollars to Ukraine annually over the next 2 years. That just got signed the other day. Canada. Uh-oh. Oh, no. Don't you do it. Don't you black out on me, power. Canada is going to finance a $500 million aid package to purchase U.S. military equipment for Ukraine through the prioritized Ukrainian requirements list. So here we're looking at, $10.5 billion right now in aid that is just now getting approved? Gets even better. Ukraine and Canada signed a joint defense production agreement that will simplify the establishment of Ukrainian defense industries companies in Canada. That's going to facilitate technology exchanges and provide Ukraine with more modern weapons and military equipment for long term. So not only, right, do we have signs that this ceasefire isn't going well, what we're actually seeing is long term investments going into Ukraine. Canada is going to ramp up production for them to make sure that they get what they need. Germany, $10 billion U.S. dollars worth of equipment that's going to end up getting sent over into Ukraine. And then Canada financing $500 million in an aid package to purchase U.S. military equipment that's going to be going to Ukraine as well. Now, all of that is showing a huge influx of stuff that's going into Ukraine. Now, why would they be doing that? Well, likely because this whole ceasefire like crap that everybody's been talking about and highly like raving about isn't going to go through. We've seen signs from the Kremlin. We've seen we've seen no signs from the Kremlin that they're willing to do that. The closest that we had was Lavrov coming out stating that like, yeah, we'll consider meeting with Zelensky, but we probably won't, right? They're not going to do it. Now, over along the front line that I was just talking about, oh, I almost forgot this one. Sorry, this is a big one. UAMOD and the Ukrainian Minister of Defense and the Lithuanian Defense Minister are set to sign a letter of intent on August 25th. That was yesterday, right, on the joint production of defense products in both countries, with an emphasis on the joint production of long-range drones. So now we have Lithuania and we have Canada all setting up production for Ukrainian munitions. And we have Germany purchasing more, and we have Canada purchasing more. Dude, it is getting out of control. So all of these countries are going over to finance the war effort over inside of Ukraine and actually set them up for success. And how is that turning out? Well, it's actually turning out pretty good. Let's take a look at the front line and what just came off of it.
Прошу поменять меня, ребят, с Азова.
Следующий.
Прошу поменять меня, ребят, из Азова.
Следующий.
Прошу поменять меня на ребят с Азова. Прошу поменять меня на ребят с Азова.
Прошу поменять меня на ребят с Азова.
For those that are listening and can't view the video, they are saying, please exchange me for members of Azov, meaning I'm a captured Russian soldier. Please give me up for a Ukrainian soldier, in case you needed a translation.
Прошу поменять меня на ребят с Азова.
Глухой, включись.
Прошу поменять меня на ребят с Азова.
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 Now, what can we learn from this video? Let's take a look, because again, these guys are fresh off the front line. Here we have a younger looking guy, still like shaved head. And notice how we've got a lot of these guys that have about the same damn hair length. And this is something I've noticed now in the last two POW videos that I've gotten off the front line over in Ukraine. And yes, I did misstate that a little bit, stating that, you know, Azov being, you know, soldier, but you guys understand what I'm saying. Azov is a unit, not necessarily Ukrainian soldiers, right? Like, come on, calm down, everybody. All right. But as we look at these guys and we take a look, you can see a lot of them have these freshly shaved heads that are coming up over on the front line that are coming off of it. And then you have guys like this with a little bit longer hair that have been there for a little bit longer. And he absolutely looks like he needs a Snickers bar, right? This guy is not very well fed. He's freaking tiny. You can see his bone structure through his uniform, and his uniform is way oversized for like who he is. And then you continue to go down this line and we continue to take a look at these guys. Now, some of them look a little bit better. This guy, again, very short hair, not very well kept, uniform looks like crap, and he also looks a little malnourished. You go a little bit deeper, this guy looks like maybe he just got out there or he's a little bit higher ranking. I don't know why, but that just screams like officer hiding in plain sight to me. That guy does. And we take a look at this guy, a little bit older. Take a look at this guy, very freaking old, sitting up over on the front line. We take a look at this guy. He looks like, again, another sack of bones, right? So some of these guys that are sitting up there have likely, that have at least been there for a while, look absolutely freaking starved to death. This guy actually has hair. He's been around for a while, but again, guy with hair, let's take a look. Absolutely freaking starved to death. This dude with his little freaking pedo stash, you guys know how much I love mustaches. This guy with his little pedo stash doesn't look too bad, but he's got a really nice jacket, doesn't he? Doesn't he have a nice jacket? Well, they decided that they ran out of duct tape for him and had to run some paper over his eyes just to make sure he couldn't see anything. I'm sure that was fun. And this guy just looks like an old crusty freaking vet that just steals stuff from everybody. This dude looks like he's a member of the E4 Mafia, right? Anyways, I like taking a look at that because it gives me a little bit of a better idea for what's kind of going on up over there on the front line. Now, to bring you guys up to date on the front line, I need to go ahead and open up my notes because there's a lot of them and there's a lot of moving pieces. All right. Ukraine has gained territory in four different areas. All right. We've got them gaining territory in Novoshakov. All right. And that area is right over here. This is that blue line that you're seeing right here being pushed through right here along this highway. Now, they have over on the opposite side of that little incursion point. Obviously, I talked about them pushing down over here. All right. They push down in that direction, and they are kind of working together to go and close that sucker off. And again, coupled with indirect fire assets, I'd say that's squeezed off, right? Like, because there's only so many places that the Russians can move through. There's only so many places they can go, and your indirect fire assets are going to take care of the rest. So I don't really see Russians pushing through. And as a matter of fact, from everything I've read earlier, what it actually did sound like is that the Russians over in the Pokrovsk area, all right, ended up pulling up troops off the line and trying to flex them up over into here. And when that failed, we might have seen a tiny little push up over in this direction. And I don't even think that this is accurate, all right, as we go and look. And we can see where Ukraine is now working in from this backside as well. If we were to zoom in on that little pocket, Ukraine is now working in on this backside as well, pushing up over and surrounding some of these other Russian positions. So this Russian front line is very frail as we start taking a look at it. But most notably, when we go up over into Pokrovsk, you guys can see these advancements right here where Ukraine had like pushed the Russians back. All right. That's that blue that's annotated on the map right there where they'd gone over and they'd pushed the Russians back and they'd started taking terrain from them. Well, what's that mean? That means this whole area over in the Pokrovsk direction, it's pretty freaking weak, to be honest with you. They tried almost doing like a Battle of the Bulge maneuver where they took their troops and flexed them to another area. For those of you that don't know about the Battle of the Bulge, you should go read up on it. But one of the ways the Americans were able to survive the Battle of the Bulge was by, you know, basically convincing the Germans that we had more people than we did by taking them and flexing them into different areas. Well, that might work during World War II, but during advanced technology days, such as we live in today, doesn't really work out that well. I'd assessed a couple days ago that I thought that Ukraine might have picked up on this. Like, I was thinking that this is probably what was happening and the Ukraine might have probably picked up on this and actually went and they launched that attack over near Pokrovsk and they were taking terrain back. It seems like that is correct. It seems like that is correct. So what does that mean? Well, that means that Ukraine's going to have a little bit of momentum in this area. And what we might actually see is Ukraine having an offensive operation down here. It's going to start chunking this terrain back away from the Russians. Why? Because they are very poorly supplied. They do not have a lot of supplies down there. Intel is too great to do that now. You're absolutely correct, Bo. But that seems like what they did. This almost seems like somebody taking all their freaking eggs and chucking them into a basket with like trickling some reserves behind, right? Now, the trick is because supposedly from what I've read, Russia has taken some of those troops that they weren't fully committed. So they came up here and tried to push, discovered that ain't going to work for them. And so they started flexing them back and around. So I wouldn't be surprised because this area and this area are very close to each other. If we now have Russians, all right, that are being flexed from up here, down here, trying to stop Ukraine from coming in from behind and closing them off. But it certainly seems like it's a very real possibility. So Russia's got a problem in this area. Like a very serious problem. They have troops that are cut off up here in the north, right? That's just a fact. These troops up in the north, they're cut off. They're either going to die or be taken hostage or POW sometime in the near future. The other problem that they have is they have multiple fronts within that. And it's soon to like turn into like a forefront freaking war, to be honest, for them, because this whole area is getting cut off. And so they're dealing with them over here, all right, up in the, what do you want to say? The north, western direction, if you will. I'm sorry, northeastern direction over in the west, and then also down here in the south. But even more so, they're having issues over in Pokrovsk, where Ukraine has been pushing pretty hard. So that's going to cause these Russian commanders to try to figure out where they're going to be flexing these dang troops. And again, their supply line sucks. It's horrible. And so the moment they try flexing their troops to one direction or another, you got to understand that these Russian commanders also have to take something else into account, which is them being spotted and moving, because Ukraine's going to know where the majority of these troops are located at. Sergeant wants me to do a helicopter in my pants. No, sir, I will not be doing a helicopter in my pants this morning. Nope, nope, nope. That ain't going to happen. No pants helicopters for you, sir. So I apologize, but yeah, that's not going to happen. I am not wearing pants today again. All right. So for 2 days in a row, for some reason, you guys are obsessed with my freaking pant line and wanting to see it. I am not wearing pants for a second day in a row. I'm just stating that. Yes, I am wearing shorts though. All right. So I'll save you guys the heartache on that. So that's kind of the story. But the other interesting thing when we go over, when we take a look at it, is also over in Chasiv Yar, it would appear that Ukraine is making some gains as well. So if we go out and we zoom up on that, we come outside of Bakhmut and we go take a look, Ukraine has been allegedly pushing the Russians back over in the Chasiv Yar direction. Interesting. Why? Because I haven't really heard anything about it, but this goes into the question that just got asked earlier about the zero line, and if I actually see it shifting. Stephen Walkie coming and gifting out 10 Speak the Truth memberships. Do I see the zero line shifting? Not really, to be honest with you, man. You know, like years ago, even talking about this area over here, and if you really talk about, like, if you really think about it, how far has Russia moved with Chasiv Yar? Let's just take this one little slice of the pie. They haven't, right? In the overall grand scheme of things, they haven't taken jack and diddly squat. And again, it comes at the cost of 200 lives per square kilometer of any terrain that they have taken. Well, maybe not lives, but casualties per square kilometer of any terrain that they have taken. In order for Russia to advance and actually move that line forward, understand the amount of lives that would take for them to move that line forward 100 meters across the entire front. They're going to have to, like, they're going to have to basically refit their entire military. So the Russians are more or less locked in place. They can't really go anywhere. All right. And if we were to take that and we were to look a little bit freaking stronger and we go down over here in this direction where that paper tiger has pretty much broken through. All right. That paper tiger is showing itself really, really good. And what that means is that Ukraine hasn't been on the attack. All right. Now it looks like Ukraine is going on the attack over here in this area. So if we do see a zero line shift, it's not going to be very far, and it's going to be the Ukrainians pushing them back all the way to that trench system, right? Why? Bo says 150 to 300,000. They currently have, I think it's like 1.2 million on active duty. But yeah, pretty much everybody on the front line would be giving their lives just to shift like 100 meters forward, like the entire line all the way across. It's absolutely disgusting. And so the only thing that we really see happening in a positive way is that what this assault that the Russians did was actually show how weak their lines are, right? Like it ends up showing how weak their lines are, and it ends up showing the paperness of this tiger. That's a lot, Matt. Yeah, correct. That's why I tell you that 200 lives per freaking square kilometer, that's a lot. Rob might have to release a NFG Ranger panties merch. Yeah, I'd go down there for like, I'd make sure I got with Rob for a photo shoot on that one. Russians can't move. And when they did try to move, it ended up showing their weakness, and Ukraine ended up exploiting it. And that exploitation is currently what you're seeing represented on the map here. Further, if Ukraine wanted to, they likely could continue to attack, but it would come at the cost. And I'm not saying Ukraine's not going to like lose lives over this. They would switch from that defensive operation to the offensive operation, and they would end up having an uptick in lives lost. So the real question is whether or not Ukraine is prepared and capable to take that, i.e. do they have enough troops in reserve? Do they have enough, you know, bodies that are ready to flex and move on that front line? I couldn't give you an honest assessment on that, but what I do know is that Ukraine has been chipping away at far more Russian lives than Russia has been chipping at Ukrainian soldier lives. How do we assess that, and how do we make that known to be true? Well, again, I give you the 200 lives or bodies per square kilometer that end up coming out of here. As we look at like the line and what Russia has done, every little chunky yellow that you see, that's Russian claimed advances. Okay. So on that map, every little chunky yellow is Russian claimed advances, and that's 200 Russian bodies per square kilometer on average. So you couple that along with the experience and stuff like that that they have, and then we look at those guys that ended up getting taken POW, and you can say in numerous videos so far, and there's ones that I haven't even showed you guys that have been sent to me that shows these dudes looking like tattered bags of freaking rags, man. Like, they just look like trash. They don't look well-equipped. They don't look well-fed. A lot of them are stating that they hadn't eaten in days. And so you couple that across the entire front line, you say, what is the state of morale of the Russian military on the front line? And it doesn't look too hot. Now, I'm sure in certain pockets, the Russians are better supplied. But the point I'm trying to make is if Russia went on the offensive, even with a highly immoralized freaking force, they're still in a defensive position. They don't have to move. They have to look straightforward and they have to pull the trigger at whatever comes towards them. And that allows them to expend less ammunition and to take more lives. It's just the way war works. So is Ukraine prepared to give up lives for that? I don't think they are. But what I do think Ukraine is prepared to do, because it doesn't make sense for them to launch a major offensive up over in this area right now, what I do think Ukraine is prepared to do is start killing a lot of these Russians that were coming after some of these main areas and cutting them off. And so when we talk about major offensive operations, it's not going to look like we saw back during the initial Ukrainian counteroffensive, right? It's going to look more like counteroffensive in particular areas that they want to go and they want to take back, because strategically, it doesn't make sense for Ukraine to do that right now. Sergeant, how much for you to sell me your pants? I ain't selling my pants. That ain't going to happen. 3M Forge says, Matt, you got to bug Rob about dropping some more NFG merch and restocking the existing merch. I'll check weekly and try and order. Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll beat him up, man. I'll reach out to him. I was just talking to him this weekend. I'll reach out to him and tell him to restock the NFG merch. Point being that when we see Ukrainian counteroffensives right now, and we're talking about counteroffensive inside of Ukraine, this is likely what we're going to end up seeing. Okay. You're going to see counteroffensive in particular areas or particular regions where the Russians are weak. Why? Because it allows Ukraine to take terrain back. Number one. And two, it allows them to expend less manpower and less ammunition. And all of that is likely going to start unfolding in little pockets along the front line. Why? Because Russia's not coming to the negotiating table. If Ukraine was to launch a major counteroffensive, an actual major counteroffensive, I still stick by, because of the shaping operations that we saw a little bit earlier, I would still stick by, we're going to see that sucker down over in the south near Kherson. Why do I say that? Because that is of extreme significant advantage, advantage to Ukraine in order to do that. When we start talking about strategic advantage, it's of extreme strategic advantage. If Ukraine wanted to push down into the south and cut off, like, let's say, down to Mariupol, look at everything they have to conquer just to get down there in order to start cutting that land bridge and everything else off. When we start talking about what's actually been coming across the bridge lately over inside like the Kerch Bridge going down into Crimea, everything else, you have a huge buildup of Russian armed forces that are down there along with logistics and supplies. What they are seriously lacking right now is fuel, as everybody knows, going after those like logistical supply points, such as, you know, fuel depots and things like that, attacking the railways, attacking vehicles coming in, and now they have a fuel shortage. With that being said, a lot less stuff is likely being over inside of Crimea. Additionally, this is one of the first places that Russia ended up taking all the way back in like 2014. And so Ukraine can go and take that back. And what it ended up doing for them, and by means of taking it back, I don't mean, going and invading the freaking peninsula. I simply mean cutting that sucker off. If they simply cut off Crimea, one, they're going to have good advantage and access points in order to do so, because you do have all of this Ukrainian held terrain back over here. So it's quick for them to resupply and push in there. But the other big advantage that it has is it cuts off Crimea from getting their butts up into Melitopol and other places. If once they do that and they're able to do that successfully, they could use any of these new munitions that are now being supplied to start attacking this region around Mariupol and anything coming out of Donetsk in order to start targeting the Russians. That is going to allow these people that are stuck over in this land bridge area to start getting cut off. Once they're cut off and their lines start to weaken, like we're currently seeing outside of Donetsk, then you're likely to see Ukraine make a solid push down into that region. Then you might actually see Ukraine push out of like the Robotnaya area and pushing down into Takhmak and everything else, right? Then you might actually see that. But again, they have a lot of defensive structures that they need to break to in order to make that happen. So you're talking about a very long, drawn out process for the future. Bo Williams says, hey, Matt, what would be a good target for Ukraine's new cruise missiles? Most probable. The new cruise missiles that they have coming in, I would say that they continue on in doing what they're doing, attacking those logistics of Russia, going after those rail cars, going after the fuel depots, going after their ammunition production facilities, all of that stuff, anywhere the, you know, Russian cruise missiles are being stored, anywhere they're being produced, anywhere their drones are being stored, anywhere they're being produced. All of those things are going to have a much greater impact than blowing them on the front line against a well-dug-in enemy. Ukraine is an inferior sized force, but size doesn't necessarily mean a dang thing when it comes down to fighting a war. It does to an extent, but when you start affecting logistics, that's when things start to fall apart. And what we are seeing is things falling apart on the front line for Russia. Now, years ago, right? And here's how you know I'm giving you an honest assessment. Years ago, back in, what was it, 2023? Around this time? I believe it was around this time. As Ukraine was blasting through Zaporizhia and approaching Rabotnya, I said Ukraine's about to fall into a trap and they're running out of munitions. It's turning into be a problem for them. I ended up having a bunch of people call me a Russian shill because I explained that Ukraine was about to get held up. And I remember sitting here talking with Rob about it and telling you guys that if something doesn't change within the Ukrainian supply system, they're not going to be able to continue to advance. And what we ended up seeing unfolding over the months that followed was exactly that. We ended up seeing the supply system from the United States under the Biden administration, all right, getting cut off. And I've got a whole freaking spiel that I won't even get into because it'll take too long about what ended up happening down in here. But it's very clear that that's exactly what happened. They ended up like dubbing this area like the highway of death, right, down in here because of what Ukraine ended up getting into. All right. And then that just kind of became the line where they just held. But point being, I think before Ukraine even bothers pushing through down here, you're likely to see an offensive kick off out of Kherson or like possibly like no BS, like an attack launch from the sea to start chipping away at this terrain so that they can go over and they can cut off Crimea, because there's only a couple bridges that Ukraine would have to control in order to kind of control that whole area. Matt has called this war almost 99% accurate. Thanks, Michael. I mean, I have made my mistakes in the past, but it's what seems logical. So what seems logical for me in the future is Ukraine to continue on doing these small counteroffensive operations like we are currently seeing out here and taking little chunks of terrain in order to save that ammunition and everything else up as everything begins to influx and come from these other nations that are sitting outside. Once that's done and Ukraine has a solid enough reserve, you're likely to see an attack getting launched down here in the south, cutting off Crimea, followed by an assault that's going to push through and cut off this main headquarters element that they've got sitting over in Tokmak, Melitopol, and all those areas, right? So likely we're going to see that get chopped off. Once that's chopped off, Ukraine goes and takes that out. Then they can literally start pushing the freaking line back, and you're likely to see things start collapsing all the way back into Donetsk like we originally saw in the freaking beginning of the war. Now, make no mistake about it, if Ukraine does launch this operation, you're talking about a very serious battle that would take place down here, and a lot of lives would be lost. A lot of ammunition would be expended, which means Ukraine is not in its best interest right now to assault majorly across the front line out here in the east. Why? Because if there was any sort of deal to be cut, Russia is going to have to be pushed back. They're going to have to be put on their heels to actually order to force them to come through, right? The most logical piece of terrain, not that Zelensky can do it and not that anything else can happen, would for them to say, okay, take Donetsk, call it a day, right? For them to literally take what's outlined in black up over there in the east and say, you know what, Russia, have it. We don't give a crap. Why? Because Ukraine already shares a border with Russia. This really wouldn't change too much of like the logistical supplies. The only problem is the mine that the U.S. has interest in is over in that region. So likely during that negotiation phase, it's going to be some portion of it. Ukraine's going to have to weigh out whether it's worth it or not for them to actually go in and take this back from Russia. Kind of like what we did during World War II before we looked at assaulting on Japan. Is it going to cost us more lives to go in and take Japan? Or is it just going to be another freaking day? Like, do we just cut it off, drop a nuke on it, call it a day? Hopefully they surrender, right? Maybe something like that takes place. Tom Bone says it's not the size of the dog in the fight, size of the fight and the dog. And right now, Ukraine is a bloodthirsty wolf stalking its prey. It's a fairly accurate assessment. And that's not to say that Ukraine hasn't had losses. Excuse me. It's not to say that Ukraine hasn't had any of its losses and that it hasn't lost terrain. But what it does say is that, Ukraine has some tactical patience is what you need to have on the battlefield. And I think right now Ukraine's exercising decent tactical patience. They're taking the W's that are being given to them. They're falling back where they need to be. Dude, even if I go back up over on the map, and you guys all remember how I was talking about up over here in Sumy back in June, and I told you that, you know, Ukraine was retrograding back over to this area, and that Russia was about to get their freaking poop pushed in because they're falling into a major ambush. Predicted this all the way back in June. And that's exactly what ended up happening. As you can see, several of these villages have been liberated by Ukraine, and there's word of a new counteroffensive operation that Ukraine is also launching in this region as well. They are pushing Russia back. This line right here, like I said, Ukraine's going to set up those defensive fighting positions over here along these wood lines, and you've got hundreds of meters of open space that Russia would have to come across. Everybody said, Matt, you're freaking crazy. That's not what's going to happen. Russia's going to kick their teeth in. There's 50,000 Russians, blah, 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 blah. That's not how war works at all. What we ended up seeing, Russia made it to that line, ended up getting their poop pushed in. Ukraine came in and flanked all the way from over here, all right, flanked over in this direction, and now we've got Russia being pushed back, all right? That's a fact. Russia has been kicked out of here, and they're about to get kicked out of here. And so the more Ukraine continues to push and push and push, the less Russia can do. This within itself should have been a major Russian victory for the amount of troops that they had thrown at it. Should have. It certainly looked that way when Russia was advancing, and everybody's screaming, oh my God, you know, Russia is making these huge advancements, blah, 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 blah. But again, those are people that do not study warfare and understand how it works. Sometimes pulling back to a better defendable location, like we saw here, is what ends up like winning. And that's exactly what happened. And we see that same tactical patience being exercised across the front line, particularly in those locations, right? Particularly in those locations where, you know, Russia had allegedly made those advancements and they were going to kick butt. Now what's happening? They had exercised tactical patience and they're pushing back. We are going to continue to see operations like these. We see it taking place down over near Pokrovsk, and we see it up over near Sumy, where Ukraine is exercising tactical patience and then moving in on Russia. That's what's smart. It conserves ammunition and it conserves manpower. Russia, on the other hand, thinks that they have an endless supply of manpower, and so that's what they're doing. Now I want to take your guys' attention. I want to shift it, all right, from what's taking place over inside of Ukraine, and I want to bring you down over here, because the other day I reported that Ukraine was launching strikes on Yemen and the Red Sea. And again, as a location that I said is very crucial, right? Because the Red Sea within itself, all of the oil and everything that's going through there is of a huge advantage to Russia. When the Red Sea ended up getting shut down, everybody had to go and shift like their freaking supplies all the way around just to get things over to Asia. Russia, on the other hand, had great access. Great access, not only Egypt being a member of BRICS, all right, but also the Houthis attacking everybody else. Russians seem to get away with that scot-free for some reason, and we were able to offload their oil at a much cheaper price, all right? Now, all right, we ended up seeing the U.S. come out. We ended up seeing, who was it, Nate Vance saying that, or I forget who it was that said in the Signal chat that the goal was to basically reopen the Red Sea. Then the U.S. ends up pulling out. Well, now we see Israel. That's actually stepping up. And so it kind of makes me wonder if politically the United States didn't kind of pass this off to Israel and say, when you guys start to become more capable of doing this, which is going to lead us into Lebanon, you guys start attacking Yemen and shutting the Houthis down so that the Red Sea gets reopened, because that's also going to impact Russia. And what did we see come out yesterday?
אנחנו ממשיכים בהטלת מצור אווירי וימי ופוגעים במטרות תשתית שמשמשות לקידום הטרור החותי. על כל טיל שישגרו לעבר ישראל, החותים ישלמו בריבית דריבית. היום הבאנו על החותים מכת חושך ועלתה, בהמשך תהיה גם מכת בכורות.
Now Israel is coming out, going after the Houthis, saying that every ballistic missile they fire, they're going to end up paying dearly for. They're going to end up launching a freaking naval blockade. They're taking care of their ports. Israel announced that they're going to go after the Houthis. And if Israel does that, and they actually conduct this well, and exercise that tactical patience, just like we talked about, what's going to end up happening is those Houthis in the Red Sea, the Houthis are going to be next to nothing. Red Sea will be reopened. That's going to affect Russia's supply. Because remember how I talked about what was taking place and how it's a long-term drawn-out operation? Well, now imagine, in addition to all of this stuff, Russia's oil can no longer compete on the global market. 30% of their GDP. I state that all of the time. 30% of their GDP. How much do you think that's going to affect the Russian war machine? A lot. A lot. It's going to end up affecting them a lot. And so all of this appears to be like a global phased type operation that the United States, Ukraine, and Israel are kind of all working together on. All right. Obviously, Israel, it's in their best interest to stop the Houthis from firing ballistic missiles, but it's also in the EU, and it's also in the U.S.'s best interest to have that sucker opened up, and it's also in Ukraine's best interest to have that sucker opened up so that we can start chipping away at freaking Russian oil. Speak the fart. That's right. I farted when I said BRICS because it's BRICS. All right, I'm done. All right, so what's taking place now over inside Lebanon? Because I think Lebanon is kind of the key that allowed Israel to free themselves up and be able to start focusing on Yemen a little bit more. Listen to this.
Okay, wait. We're going to have a different set of rules, right? You want, please be quiet for a moment. And I want to tell you something. The moment that this starts becoming chaotic, like animalistic, we're gone. So you want to know what's happening? Act civilized, act kind, act tolerant, because this is the problem with what's happening in the region.
So this is the U.S. ambassador to Turkey. He arrived over inside of Lebanon and was giving like a press briefing. And what was he doing inside of Lebanon? He's attempting to strike a deal with the Lebanese government for a way forward between the U.S., Israel, and Lebanon. Other thing this gentleman is actually charged with as well that I found out today is he's the special envoy to Syria. Now, part of the things that he is negotiating, is, how do I want to say, allowing Israel to build a humanitarian aid corridor for the Druze down in Sweda. All right. And so to put that into perspective for you guys, I guess I'll have to open up our handy dandy friend, the map again, and put this back up. So you guys are, most of you are familiar with kind of what took place. And so if I zoom out, obviously there's Ukraine way up there. And then we have Israel right down here, like in the center, right? But as we zoom in and we take a look, we had the situation inside of southern Syria, all right, specifically down in Sweda, all right, where we ended up having HTS along with a bunch of Islamic militants that went down and assaulted them. Now, why is this important? Because Israel wants to take care of the Druze, and they also likely want to create a buffer zone. Let's not lie about that, to keep HTS from going and assaulting Israel, all right? That man that was just speaking is currently up over inside of Lebanon. Why did he go up in there and talk to them? Because if you guys remember last year, in the, what was it, November freaking peace agreement between Israel and Hezbollah, Hezbollah was supposed to draw themselves north of the Litani River, right? Israel, in return, was supposed to withdraw from southern Lebanon. Currently, that's not what the situation looks like. How much terrain has actually been taken back by the Lebanese government? Went through and started fact-checking things today. I can give you guys a precise number if I could find my notes on this. But I believe it was right around 80% of the terrain that they ended up occupying over there had been taken back, all right, by Israel. Or I'm sorry, by the Lebanese armed forces, UNIFIL, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Even today, over inside of Tyre, I think it's pronounced Tyre, over here in the south, right? Like if we zoom in on it, I'm pretty sure it's down here. It's not showing up on the map. I don't know why I can't find it right now. But over in Tyre, what ended up happening was you ended up having a massive turnover in weapons and stuff like that today to UNIFIL forces and everybody else. So the way forward in the issue that we're currently seeing over inside southern Lebanon is Hezbollah hasn't completely and totally withdrawn, and they haven't completely and totally given up. And the Lebanese government has been catching a lot of flack over this, right? And Hezbollah's stance when it goes down to giving up and turning everything over is, well, we're not going to completely disarm. We're not going to do a dang thing until Israel ends up leaving Lebanon. Israel's refusing to leave Lebanon because you still have Hezbollah that's been setting up and attacking them. That's very clear. So according to the ceasefire agreement from last year, is what Israel's doing legal? Yes. Because within the ceasefire agreement, it said that according with international law, they're allowed to defend themselves. So that's still allowed. But they also agreed to abide by the old UN resolution 1701, all right, and Hezbollah has not abided by that. They're still holding on to terrain south of the Litani River and haven't pulled back. And they haven't agreed to disarm. So if Hezbollah is holding terrain south of Litani, that means that they have not abided by the ceasefire agreement. Therefore, Israel doesn't have to withdraw from southern Lebanon. Now, the catch-22 is that until Israel gives up five positions in southern Lebanon, they're occupying five hilltops over by the blue line. That's it. Five hilltops. Just to make sure that Hezbollah stays back and does what they're supposed to be doing. They are not currently in occupied areas of freaking southern Lebanon. They are not in civilian cities. They are on hilltops observing and defending the Israeli borders. That's what they're doing. Now, how is the United States actually trying to like play this out? I was shocked when I dove into this today. The United States is actually putting forth a buttload of money to help rebuild southern Lebanon after Israel went in and kicked Hezbollah's teeth in. Hezbollah is pissed because their funding seemingly has been cut off. The funding for their dead martyrs has disappeared. The funding for their buildings that were destroyed and their homes that were destroyed during this fight has also disappeared. And so Hezbollah is like grasping at straws down in the south, trying to maintain what little territory they still currently control. We are taking food here, Matt. We're talking food here. Yeah, cheeseburgers from Whataburger. Why are you guys talking about cheeseburgers, man? This is a big deal. Because if this gets signed and this actually goes into agreement here in the next couple of weeks, that means Israel doesn't have to worry about Hezbollah if Lebanon ends up actually doing their job and UNIFIL actually ends up doing their job. They're about 80% of the way there. They're about 80% of the way there, and the U.S. is about to commit a buttload of money to rebuild like southern Lebanon from where all that war and everything was taking place. So if they commit that money and they end up rebuilding southern Lebanon, dude, it's over. It really is at that point. And that means that Israel is going to have a buttload more troops available to start doing what? And aircraft. Start focusing on Yemen. And again, all of that is going to end up affecting Iran, which we haven't even discussed. That's for a later video. And what's taking place over inside of Syria. Imagine that. Imagine that. So I look forward to kind of like the way that's going to go. Now, as we're going to talk about this over inside of the West Bank, I told you guys that Israel had been launching some major operations in the last couple of days. And we're going to touch on that. They actually went after, and it looks like, I'm trying to remember the figure. Let me look real quick. I didn't give a figure yet for how many of the terrorists they ended up getting, but they ended up launching an operation over inside of Ramallah and ended up capturing a couple terrorists. And you're going to see one of them here in this video. So here you've got them moving in on the objective, showing up, coming outside. Not a lot of fancy stuff to see here, but allegedly Israeli soft raid. Doesn't look very soft to me, but that's what people are claiming. Yep, there you see them coming in at different buildings. And here we see them actually marching out with some of these terrorists or alleged terrorists, right? If this was the United States of America. So alleged terrorists that they ended up going in and capturing. Now that's following the roundup of about 90 or so of these like piles of garbage. Now, this video in particular is kind of interesting. It took me a second to figure out why I wanted to take a look at this, and hopefully you guys got big enough screens to see it. But right here in white, you can see a guy that's blindfolded. That's right down here by that white vehicle. You see me circling my cursor on it. I'll move it on the black. So right here, this guy in white, he's blindfolded and appears to be cuffed with several Israelis standing behind them. They actually did go in and hit objectives. Believe it or not, that's fake. They actually did go in and hit objectives. Here's some CCTV footage of them going in. So them assaulting freaking markets and things of that nature, going in and taking care of it. Yeah, good on them, right? Clearly, these storefronts, and there you see your Palestinian flag and all that crap hanging up. These storefronts, in my experience, are often used in the backside, all right, for those different terror operations. So civilians end up seeing this video and they go, oh my gosh, Israelis ended up assaulting a market. They threw flashbangs in the market and so on and so forth. Matt ends up seeing that video and going, you know what? The Israelis ended up hitting a legitimate military objective, likely based on intel where terrorists were operating. And with the people standing outside, it looks like they actually got their freaking jackpot and were able to take back whoever they wanted. The mall in Ramallah. This is a very interesting one that I ended up coming across today. Check this out. You know, everybody likes to think that the West Bank is all freaking oppressed and everything else. You want to see a mall in Ramallah that was currently under terrorist attack? Let's just pause that for a hot second. Take a look at that. That, ladies and gentlemen, is the West Bank. Go ahead and breathe that one in for a hot minute. That is the West Bank. Yeah, buddy. Take a look at that. That's your West Bank. That's what's actually going on over there. Just a big freaking shopping center, all that crap. Now, something else I found really interesting. Well, I told you guys that I dug into that video a little bit more from yesterday. I wasn't lying when I said that. Somebody provided me with a new angle this morning of that particular strike that ended up taking place. And again, we're shifting focus over into Gaza, right, of that strike over on the Nasser Hospital. Now, in this particular scene, I noticed something very interesting from this camera angle, right? This video, all right, I just changed the lighting on it slightly to make it a little bit more clear. And you can see some really interesting stuff come out of this video. Number one, as you can see on your screen, we have the cameraman that's up here. All right, now I'm going to show you guys this here in a hot second. I'm also going to show you where it hit. Most notably, the other thing that I noticed was this open window off over to the side of it. And it has what we in the sniper community like to call target indicators. Target indicators. If I'm looking at this video, if I'm looking at the scene, is there something that's going to zero me in on this location and suggest threat? Yes, there is. That particular threat is in that window. Now, we have seen numerous, all right, numerous videos of Hezbollah, or I'm sorry, not Hezbollah, but I don't want to call them Hamas snipers, right? And this video in particular that's up on your screen, it is a decent camera. This is a good HD camera. This isn't just garbage. This is a loophole that they're filming through. I also ended up freeze framing it on this particular frame for a reason. Now, right here, you can actually see where the round impacts the ground, and it's off to the right. This guy right here, or one of these guys, was the actual target. And what you see is this round splashing and impacting over here off to the right. Well, what does that mean? If we draw a line coming through, it would mean that the shooter is off to the left side of the screen as you're looking. That is, the cameraman is offset from the shooter. Now, why would they do that? If we go back and we look at this original video right here, this angle, and we take a look at it. If we go back and we take a look at this original one right here, you can see the camera is also offset. All right, and this time it's on a stairwell. So why would it be on a stairwell? Well, because it's a hospital, right? But the interesting thing is if that camera was inside of that building, it would likely have an obstructed view and it would likely show them shooting from inside. This way, they're able to show that it's just kind of in an open area and they'd be able to get some really good footage of some Israelis getting sniped should they choose. Knowing that the hospital is a protected structure under international law and that it can lose that protection, right? And if the Israelis decide to strike it, well, great. They get more propaganda out of it, right? That's what, in my opinion, what we're seeing here. So over on that window, we see two things. I put it in a thread. You can kind of see this little thing off to the right of the window. But interesting, over on the left side, you can see the same thing. Now, what could that be? That could be a lot of different things. Now, likely, what I believe it is them setting up different layers, whether it be screening, netting, or anything of that nature, which, yes, I've seen them doing that inside of some of these Hamas videos. They do have trained snipers. And if that's what they set up inside of this window, it would be almost impossible for the Israelis to actually look in there and see a actual sniper. Therefore, if they can't see the sniper, they can't depict the threat, they don't have a legitimate reason to fire upon it. But these two things combined together, one, the camera that's set out there, coupled with all of that, in my opinion, depending on what's going on, maybe they were taking sniper fire prior to all of this. And if they were taking sniper fire prior to all of this, that would have cued the Israelis over into that direction. I highly doubt Israel is just shooting a tank round because there's a freaking cameraman there. Every single person over inside of Gaza is a dadgum journalist at this point, right? But what's interesting, in addition to this type of evidence, all right, is that camera is clearly visible. You can see it here in this photo, and you can see it here in this photo. This is a different angle. And you see these two wooden posts right here that are right there, plus this camera, and then you have this guy that's sitting down hiding. Why do you have a cameraman sitting down and not doing anything with a camera pointed off into nowhere? That's a very interesting question that nobody wants to ask. That cameraman is sitting down below line of sight from anybody on the ground. So it almost looks like the camera is just set up by itself. But if you have Israeli troops that are operating out in the open and you're shooting with an HD camera, and what this actually looks like, you know what I ought to just do is go get, hold on. I have this. Now, what that actually looks like that's over that is something like this, okay? This is actually like a reader, but they come with different flaps and things to like ignore the reflection and things like that that are on the camera. And so when you take a look at this image and where it's at, that's kind of what it looks like it's set up to be. It's not going to be having any sort of reflection going out, anything of that nature. And then I had to ask myself, why would they put a white towel over it? Well, let's pay close attention. What color is the wall in the background? That's white. What color is this right here? That's white. Do we think that that might be an attempt to camouflage that camera system? Yes, I do. And then you coupled with this guy sitting down here on his freaking butt, kind of makes me wonder. And then we take a look at kind of like where everything's set up. Obviously, this is like post strike number one, but you can see these two posts that are set up right here, right? We see those two posts. That's where that camera was at. That's where everything was at. So where did that round end up impacting? Very good question. Well, these are your signs that Hamas was actually on the target. How do we know Hamas was there? This guy right up here is a Hamas freaking like known POS. He was out filming himself and standing in front of burnt Israeli tanks and everything else. This guy down here, same thing, known Hamas camera POS. Both of them are on the books. So at least two of them we know were there. So now we have information that confirms Hamas was on the objective because two of their buttheads ended up getting killed. We have a camouflaged camera system with an operator that's just chilling out, recording, likely in HD, all the way out. Right? And in addition to that, we have this. This was not a freaking bomb. What this tells you is proportionality was correct. It might be hard for you to see, so I'm going to blow it up. Mighty Spatula says, sorry, brother, I just got here. Saw the video from last night. Free ball on Matt is the best Matt. Pants or no pants today. Hell yeah, brother. So when we take a look at this video, what you end up seeing is you see where that tank round ended up impacting. Again, they had already shot one. If we go back and we take a look. Here. Directly at that threat. Right? Where that individual would have been sitting doing whatever the heck he wanted. That next tank round, actually, you see where that camera's at, ends up impacting right here. Why? Because on this staircase at the time, you have unconfirmed enemy combatants that are coming up. They could have been rescue workers, etc. But that threat and where everybody was at could have also been coming from up here. Now, Israel, depending on their point of view or these tank operators, might not have seen where that sniper was actually shooting from. That window could have appeared as nothing. But there's also camera systems and there's also technology available that even we in the United States had, stuff like the boomerang system that gives you a distance and direction of where you're being shot at from. It actually hears the freaking round that's like zipping by from a sniper and will give you a distance and direction from where it's coming. And there's other advanced technology that exists that does the same thing. I need to check whether or not that's actually employed by Israel. If it is, great. That's more evidence that they were zeroed in on this particular area. And then when you see the cameraman and you see people hiding plus sniper fire, that tells you exactly where that crap is coming from. That, ladies and gentlemen, is a proportional strike to the threat that they likely had intelligence on in order to make that happen. Then you end up getting those Hamas propaganda videos that come out trying to claim that this is just a big freaking, you know, show and that it's all wrong. Nope, not how that works whatsoever. Oh, my goodness. Now, unfortunately, I have to let you guys go this morning because I have a debate with Scott Ritter coming up here in about an hour and a half. It's going to be hosted by Mario Knoffel. He's going to be the one that's going to be, how do you want to say, moderating this thing. We're going to be talking about Israel, and we're also going to be talking about Ukraine. We're going to be talking about Iran. We're going to be talking about Lebanon. It's very Israel-focused. And Scott Ritter, while he might be a pedophile, excuse me, if you guys didn't know, he's a, I ended up doing this read the other day over on my X account. He is, how do I want to say this? I want to make sure I get the verbiage correct. Pedophile is not accurate. That's not what they labeled him. They labeled him, and I quote, a sexually violent predator. Sexually violent predator. And that is within the court documents. And it's really scary to actually hear what he did. Yeah. Ritter where? Believed to be in Moscow right now. He was over in Crimea not that long ago. He's not registered on the National Sex Offender Registry. I mean, each state has their own, but there's also one on the national basis. So it's not showing him living anywhere. But yeah, Mario Knoffel over on Twitter space, or over on Twitter. It's likely going to end up being pre-recorded, but I do want to make sure that I'm prepared and ready to go for that. He is. But he also has a lot of twisted facts that he likes to throw out. So I want to be able to do my research so I can embarrass this guy properly over on there. Cards are definitely stacked against me on the channel that I'm being interviewed, or that we're hosting this debate on. I'll make sure it's set up and ready to go. All right. So when it comes out, it's likely going to be pre-recorded, but when that comes out, yeah, I'll let you guys know so that you guys are able to go watch it and have a good laugh at it. But like I said, it's scheduled to start in about an hour and a half, likely going to be pre-recorded. If it is live, you'll know. You can go over there and check on it. You guys will probably be able to see it if it's live. So in about an hour and a half, you can go over there. Here, let me put this up on the screen so you guys know where to go. Right over here. All right. So this is the place that's going to be hosting it. All right. This is the gentleman that's going to be hosting it and moderating it. And it's for the Roundtable Live. So maybe it will be live. Maybe it won't. I don't know. I forget if it's pre-recorded. I really don't care. You guys go over there, check it out. Yeah, I will also be recording as we go along, so I have plenty of clips and everything just in case things are taken out of context. All right. But I'm going to have all that for you guys. With that being said, I want to get going so I can prepare for that. All right. So in the meantime, ladies and gentlemen, peace, love, happiness, and God bless. If you haven't yet, subscribe to the dang channel. Subscribe. Make sure your notifications are turned on. For the love of God, turn them on. Do it. I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Turn on your dang notifications. Here's Ukraine. God bless. I'm out of here.